Blog Talk Radio.
I've been dreaming, friendly faces. I've got so much time to kill. Just imagine people.
Welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters. You never know, maybe a Twisted Mister or two. I hope everyone's having a good week so far. I know it's only Tuesday, but you got to say it. And I hope everyone has a wonderful week to follow. Absolutely just a great week here so far. And I see we have a little bit of a conversation going on in the room. We've got water right. So that should be a really fun thing to pursue. Hi, Pam. How are you?
I am doing great. Life is good despite changes in auto rank. The rest of it goes on with its usual craziness. Did some morning errands. And then after that, it was napping and, you know, just doing some writing and reading and all that fun stuff. Great lineup of poetry tonight. I'm looking forward to it. And of course, hanging out with you and other cool poets. So, yep.
I saw a change of it. Yeah, I think it's a wonderful looking board of poetry. A lot of great people wrote for it. I was glad to see some people had some fun with those prompts. Tough crowd around here, tough crowd. But it's all
awesome. Yes.
Yeah, I just, I was glad to see we had a good sense of that. Absolutely. And, so anyway, I think that it should be fun. That's my motto today.
Absolutely.
Kind of thing. I see that Dexter is in the room, or was in the room. Laurent, Intactful Poet. Hello, and hello. Hope everyone's doing okay.
Good to see them all.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always good to see some folks in the room. I don't know what the deal is with the auto rank, but I found three suggestion things over in suggestions and policies. So they may give us a clue when we're all done. We just never know. I can tell you some of my work that's been lingering at the bottom of my list suddenly came to the top, and I said, see, I knew that was a good piece. Only kidding.
Well, you know, what's funny now is now the way it's all screwed up, my third highest auto rank poem is a monotetra chain that I wrote about armpit sniffers, and it is titled Armpit Sniffers. And as much as I enjoy humor and as much as I enjoy monotetra, I do not think a poem about armpit sniffers should necessarily be a 10 auto rank.
Oh my God, that's terrible. Yeah, I mean, I like the one that that they moved to, like he moved up to top. Actually, my highest rated poem is the radio schedule. No kidding.
Oh, that's funny.
It's the highest thing. And one of our first anthologies is my second. Then my third is a poem that I wrote all by my little self, and it's good. It has a lot of sentimental value to me, but, you know, no. And then I think one of my number one, two, or three poems is now like number seven. So at least that one didn't fall too far from grace. But it's really strange. I'm like, wow. And I really don't pay attention to order ranks very often. But when I do a poem, I always do look. Came up with a conversation. I had to take a peek, and I was like, really? That's very odd. Very odd. But, yeah, it's always an adventure. And, yeah, I mean, that's a drastic change. And some of the comments over on that suggestion board are pretty crazy. I had blah, blah, blah number of number 10s, and now I have 11. Okay, whatever. Sorry. Yeah. I mean, I just think that, I don't know. I just shake my head because he'll change it again in a month or two, and, you know, all the top ones will fall somewhere else because he's done this a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin likes to be like an adventurer.
Yes.
Yeah.
An explorer. He's like a Star Trek, you know, explorer of new universes or something.
There you go. Like to go where no man has gone before, that's for sure. I think it's interesting. People don't always take time to do that. Oh, since I don't pay too much attention to it, I don't get too rattled. I get confused when I look at it, but I don't get rattled. Thank God. Someday all of mine will be like 10. He keeps shifting things the way he does. All my worst stuff just keep floating up there, and it'll all be good. So anyway, Pam, what's your weather today? Is it hot, cold, warm, snowing?
It's medium. It's a little warmer than it was yesterday, but yesterday was so weird. Like if you had come to here to this part of Wisconsin yesterday, you would have sworn it was a September morning.
Really?
It was chilly. It was, you know, the sky was gray and cloudy. It was down to the low 60s. And today, you know, isn't super hot. Right now we're 74, and I think the highest we got was 78. So surprisingly for July, pretty cool. How about you? How are things in the good old East Coast?
Well, we had one day of thunderstorms. Yesterday seemed pretty good. You know, we didn't have any. I think we had a rainstorm at night. That was about that. And today it's just, it's been hot. It's been kind of humid. Today it's kind of like when you go to go out the door, the air feels thick. It's not really, it doesn't come off as gross humid, but it just feels there's humidity in there. It's just not the same. It's not the kind where you walk out and you break into a sweat. This is just kind of heavy, heavy, heavy. Actually, I should never be a weatherman. You see this, right? but it's really warm and heavy.
That's difficult, that heaviness.
Yeah, it's warm and it's a little thick out there. But apparently my cucumber plant adores it because I must have like maybe 20 flowers on that thing. It's just growing.
Oh, wow.
Well, I don't know if
nice.
I have a cucumber. I got 20 flowers. You know, that's pretty good. My tomato plant finally picked up a little bit.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. That's a
yep.
That's
I got everything crossed.
Yeah.
We'll make them pickles yet. Oh my God! Yes, yeah, so
oh
that's happened. This is kicking in. The one basil plant really looks great. The other one's kind of shaded under the leaves of the cucumber. I have in a pot. I don't have them in the ground. And that basil that is kind of shadowed isn't quite taken off as much. But, you know, short of plucking the leaves off of the cucumber, you know, can't do much about it. And I don't know that I want to do that. I don't want to tempt fate. Okay, I'm surprised the thing is as big as it is.
Right.
Yeah. But,
exactly.
Yeah, so I think we're supposed to have each day this week, I think we're supposed to have thunderstorms in the evening. I think I thought we were supposed to have them this evening, but it seems to have passed us by. So, it's just weird weather. It's sticky, it's warm, you know, it goes rolling past. Like right now, it's 81 degrees. 81 is not too bad, you know. I mean, it could be a lot worse. But it's gone up to, it was up to 92 earlier.
Yeah.
So tomorrow, I think we're supposed to have rain all afternoon tomorrow, I think. So,
tell us a bit about David M. Bird and his little bee corns.
You know, I don't know a ton about Mr. Bird, but I can tell you this. When I first saw these things, my face lit up like a kid at Christmas. Then when I found that there were videos on YouTube done by him, there's a segment on there from, I think it's Sunday Morning Program, and I watched that, and I thought, oh, this guy is really something. You know, he goes out, and he collects up these acorns, and he sticks, and he looks for sticks that have the right shape for different, like, cork for the elbow and all these little pieces, and he brings them home, and he, you know, glues them all up and makes them into these little creations. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. And then he showed you how he does the photography because he builds them and then he does the photography. So, you know, he's just a busy guy like that. How he sets up the scene and, you know, tries to manage it so that way the animals will come to the little bee corns. And I just thought it was, I thought they were so precious, the images. I really did. You know, when he did the interview with the one woman, he is just as mild and as nice. He worked for Lego for many years. And I thought, oh, okay, well, you go from Legos to acorns. Like, that's kind of interesting, you know. But he really, he's intriguing to me. Because I always found it amazing. And I had a friend whose grandmother did something, not the same, but similar. How you look at something small, like an acorn, and all of a sudden you have a vision of something much different and how you transform it into that. And I think that I'm speechless over that. I really am. I think that he's pretty amazing. And I sat there and I watched all the videos and I'm saying, they're getting so many things done today. I'm like, I don't know. The videos just intrigued me so much. You know, he has a little Dremel, you know, cutting this out and sliding this in with some glue. And then he has a toolbox with all the shallow drawers in his workspace. And when you open up the drawers, it's all the little bee corns that he's created for all these different photo shoots. And I thought that was just, you know, not only did he create them and use them, but then he saved them all. Put them all away. I thought that was just adorable. So it just, I don't know, it was something that just like made my heart smile, you know, and that's what that was all about. And I was hoping that when we put it up, I'll get people's hearts to smile. So that's just I don't know. I like that kind of stuff. I do.
Yeah, it really does. It's fascinating how he creates those little people in the scenes that he creates. And it is absolutely delightful and definitely artwork to make you smile.
Yes, absolutely. I agree 100%. Tonight when I was looking for the intro for this show, I heard that intro and I said, oh, my God, because I could just imagine a V-corn. You know, I said, oh, this is it. So it was a win-win kind of day for me with that. And, I think he's just pretty amazing. So anyone who's listening that had not taken the time to check out that contest, just go look at it for the three videos that are in there. I have them kind of staggered out through the contest. They're really clever. They're cute. And he's a real mild person, a real mild individual. And for anyone who did do the contest and really liked it, he's coming out with a calendar. I don't know where to get it, but I might just have to find out. Pretty neat.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure you could get it on Amazon or something like that. You could pretty much get anything on Amazon.
I'm just going to say you can get anything on Amazon.
Yep.
It's pretty amazing. Like anything that can get a smile. And God knows, they're free, but, boy, I tell you, it takes a lot to get one. So, let's see. Now we have the third color, which is Meet You in the Wild. I think maybe I'll have to pick him. If he can't talk, if I don't. Hello, Lara, and welcome to the party.
Well, thank you very much. Sorry I'm late. I had a couple of things I had to tie up.
You were fashionably late. It's okay. You didn't find the pipe.
Well,
so, yeah, so
I'm not naming names. I don't have to say anybody.
Oh. Okay. Maybe I'll convince you to tell me later. Anyway, do you miss it? We had to talk about auto rank. Do you miss that one?
Oh, really? Yeah. Damn it. I didn't
can't
want to miss that.
Anymore. Can't comment anymore. And then we have...
Well, just tell me in brief what the group decision had to say about auto rank.
Oh, I can't say those words on air.
Oh, gotcha. All right.
But no, I'm only
I'll
kidding.
Be tactful. I'll be tactful. No,
I
won't be. That's somebody else. Peaceful Poet is that. I got it.
I actually sent you two things to look at later, so. Thinking it was like, what the hell is going on here. So, yeah.
Got it.
Yes. So, anyway, we were talking about V-corn. And we were talking how they get created and a little bit about their creator. You know, pretty good stuff. So, I guess, since I've chattered for 20 minutes, I guess it's time to start the show. Because people didn't call this.
Who else is with us? Who else is with
you
us,
me
Bam?
And Bam. You, me, and
hey,
Bam.
Hey, Bam.
Hey, Lawrence. Good to have you join us.
Thank you. How's the meadow these days? The meadow. I'm trying to make a cow joke. It didn't go over. I can see that.
Oh, duh. That one went way over my horn.
Yeah, I guess it did. I'll stop trying to say that.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It was. Never mind. I was like, "How would they answer if I'm not that good?" So I think, Laurent, I'm going to ask you to start us off. I'm going to have you start us off with a piece called "Back to My Roots" by Swimmer 7. Let me put it up. Whenever you're ready.
Back to my roots. An ivory tint of overtones streuses through the grass alone reminds me of the noisy kid who shouted loud whilst others hid. The morn drew deep in slumber on its stem-like bed, his guest to dawn in its new clothes as they prepare to wed. Countless shapes from burrows emerge from tangled schemes, the honeybee and butterfly. the badger chasing dreams. The meadow lark sings arias as it lets the red fox pass, and a stern breeze combs a parting to a brazen, fractious grass. And
nice read, Laura. Nice read. Pam, you want to kick it off?
Absolutely. I enjoyed this one. The title had a nice nostalgic feel to it. Great rhyme and flow throughout. Wonderful imagery. I really like the lines in the first stanza. Remind me of the noisy kid who shouted loud whilst others hid. You know, some kids, they're just the kind that go out there and they speak and they make themselves known, and they're bold and they're loud, and sometimes they're very overwhelming, but at the same time, they're just full of personality. And I did like the nostalgic feel to this and how it focuses on the idea of memories of childhood play. And I really liked all the way through, but especially countless shapes from burrows emerge from tangled seams, the honeybee and butterfly, the badger chasing dreams. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Absolutely. Exactly. Every word you said. I love this whole poem. I really did. I thought it was just really pretty awesome. I love this second, third, and fourth stanzas on it. The imagery in it was just fabulous. And I really liked that. I think that really made it. The beginning just was kind of like that wonder. It was a wonderful lead-in because you're like, okay. And then it just takes you into something a little bit different from that. Because, you know, ivory tint of overtone sluices through the grass alone. Reminds me of the noisy kid who shouted loud whilst others did. You know, there's nothing quite like a couple of kids playing hide and seek. You know, and, you know, Ollie Ollie Oxen Free and all that other, you know, good stuff. And, you know, no, you can't find me, that kind of thing. I think it was just really great. And then, you know, he gets into the nature of it all. It was just fabulous. Fabulous and great. So thank you so much, Wilmer Seven, for the poem. It was very much appreciated and enjoyed. And Marat, how about you?
Give me just one second as I finish this. Okay. Oh, I enjoy this a great deal, too. It's short, which is nice, because I'm not sure I lengthen this too much and still keep some of the whimsy that it possesses. I like countless shapes from burrows emerge from tangled seams, the honeybee and butterfly, the badger chasing dreams. It's a delightful wake-up, a morning filled with dew. In slumber, the grass is fractious, which I love, brazen, fractious grass. It's a personification that works, and the meadowlark singing arias, letting the red fox pass, all the little things that he puts together to paint a picture of a morning and a young boy, I assume, who's enjoying that morning and allowing it to waft him back into the days when he was just a child and enjoying these mornings. Very nicely done.
Excellent. Yes. I'm so great. Sam, I'm going to issue you the next one. This is called Sister Saplings by A.R. Mundell.
All right.
Ever you.
Sister Sapling by A.R. Mundell. She holds her sister sapling close, cradles her to her breast. Her leaves have grown up tall and bright, her bark now thick and pressed. And still she has a ways to go, to grow up high into the skies, broad as the whole clearing. Her reindeer's growing wise. This newborn is the littlest, the baby of the two. Her arms don't reach around her trunk, head sheltered from the dew. And soon she must be on her way, just one more fond embrace. The last the two will ever have is the saplings must have space. She'll walk until she finds some room, enough to grow up strong, a place that will be just for her, a place where she belongs. And as she grows, her sister will, by the shade their mothers cast, and when their leaves peek from the shrubs, they'll meet again at last. End poem.
Nice. Nice read, Pam. Very much. And Laurent, how about you? You want to kick us off?
This is a wonderful piece that managed to achieve a couple of things. You can look at this as the personification of trees and a delightful little story of the newborn, the baby of the two. But it's also, I think, about people, perhaps two human sisters, almost growing up the same way, one in the shadow of the other, both under the shadow of the mother. And as she grows, her sister will, by the shade their mother casts, and when their leaves peek from the shrubs, they'll meet again and last. They meet again as adults, sisters on an even footing, as saplings growing up next to their mother. Really well done.
Nice. Nice comment. Yeah, I thought this piece had wonderful rhyme and meter, awesome imagery throughout, and I love the personification of the bighorn as well, the bighorn and the tree, and the tale of their parting. You know, I mean, I have to go now. You know, it's like kind of sad, actually. But, yeah, again, they will meet again. So just a wonderful, wonderful job, Amy, and thank you so much for sharing with us. That was great. And, Pam, you want to give it a run?
Absolutely. This is wonderful. As always, a beautiful poem by Amy. And I like how she uses the imagery and the extended metaphors of the two trees to represent the relationship between sisters, and how sometimes, especially when there's quite an age difference, you have to kind of separate, go on your ways, but eventually in adulthood, you kind of can meet up again and connect. And it was just a wonderful write that spoke to me on personal growth and love between sisters. So very well done.
A wonderful piece, it really is. I'm going to read this next piece by Akiko Spock. And here on the board. And this is called Little Bighorn by Akiko Spock. I'm a little gift presented by a tall oak tree. My little handle on the top is unique and big. Like all the little bighorns, I'm a little acorn this morning. I may be different to many. I may not be friends with any. I enjoy living as a free spirit. It's always fun without merit. My little legs carry me across the garden, up the foresty hills. Below the mountain peaks, I'm a little acorn that never speaks. With life given from the tree, it's a pretty tall order in being big and tall. Pam, do you want to start us off?
Yes. Yes, definitely. First of all, wonderful read there. I like Akiko Sasu's description of the funny little acorn people and her attention to detail. You know, I thought this had a delightful imagery. I like that she used the first person narrative voice of the little bighorn. I especially liked the second stanza with my little legs carry me across the garden, up the foresty hills, below the mountain peaks. I'm a little acorn that never speaks. And I'm a little acorn that never speaks, you know, kind of feel to me like the idea of representing somebody who's shy. So excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. Thanks, Thomas, Sam. And Lorani, how about you?
Yeah. I'm a little gift presented by a tall oak tree. A little handle on the top is unique as to be. When I was a child, I always admired that little handle on the top. It seemed like it was a little beret, perhaps, worn jauntily by the acorn. And there's so many different kinds of acorns. As Akiko says, I'm a little acorn with horns. I may be different to many. I may not be friends with any. I enjoy living in the free spirit. It's always fun without merit. It speaks to the responsibilities of a little acorn. He has to grow up into that large tree, and he has to find a safe place to do it. And again, the ending line, it's a pretty tall order, being me. It sure is. You have to escape squirrels. You have to escape chipmunks. You have to escape the rot on the forest floor. Lots of stuff has to happen. You have to have light and air. Pretty tall order, being me. Great little piece.
Yeah, it was a cute piece. I always thought it was
Hey, can I ask a question?
Huh. Uh-oh. What's
How
that?
Come we don't see the images? How come we don't see the prompt images?
Because she didn't put the prompt on her piece, you know.
Oh, okay. All right, no problem. No, I thought that. All right.
Well, at the bottom of the poem, there is the, no, not her prompt.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, prompt one.
Keep shuttling back and forth.
I know. I probably should just go ahead and put them up for everybody. You would think that they, well, never mind. I'm going to be quiet. Because it's an AP thing. Because if you're not gold or you're not silver.
Right. I know.
Pictures on your stuff. And so.
That's bad.
The only thing I could do is shuffle the board, the topic board. But anyway, I thought this was just the right touch of youth and innocence to the right itself. I really did. And I grabbed it below the mountain peaks. I'm a little acorn that never speaks. With life given from a tree, it's pretty tall order being me. I did like the end of this very much. I thought that was a cute way to end it up and, you know, tie it together. But just, it was just a really nice piece. So thank you very much, Akiko Sox, for sharing with us. And that's nice work. Absolutely. Let me see. Laurent, I'm going to come back to you. And this is a piece by Bookworm Dave. And that is Bookworm Dave 2P7. If anyone's hunting them up. So whenever you're ready.
All right. It's called Gentleness in the Woods. Elves prowled the floor of the forest. Chief Elf Grongle heard the silent moan, his calling a creature. Took out his acorn canteen, filling it with the morning dew. Kristen, the queen chipmunk, was hurting. He gave her the sweet dew. Smiling, she accepted the kindness. He offered her, too, some food, nuts and fruits from the early picking. Filling her belly, smiles exchanged. Even elves need to live in harmony. And
that's cute. Cute piece. Pam, you want to go ahead and start us off?
Absolutely. I thought this was a delightful and heartfelt tale. And I like that the main message of it to me was how an act of the importance of an act of kindness and living in harmony. And one of the other things I really like is that he gives the characters names. And while it's not necessary for a story write, I personally favor story write where the characters are giving names because I think it makes them more real. It doesn't make them as abstract in your mind. I really thought this was nice all the way through with one part leading into the next. But I really did like Kristen, the queen chipmunk was hurting. He gave her the sweet dew. smiling, she accepted the kindness. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Great. Great. Laurent, you want to go next?
Yeah, this is exactly the kind of poem that I would love to read to my granddaughter while she's laying in bed waiting to go to sleep. It's not heavily nuanced. It doesn't have layers, but what it has is a charming story that is very teachable as well. There's a need to live in harmonies. When you add in elves and nuts and fruits and a queen chipmunk and an acorn canteen and a chief elf, you can't help but be charmed if you're a child. And you can't help but be charmed as an adult as well. I really enjoyed this piece.
Nice. Great comment there, Laurent. I think this was a really great tale told by Dave. It was short. It was sweet. You know, and very concise. What it had to say. But I thought it was one, I think the act of kindness in there, as Sam said in her comment, really showed through in this. That was the star of the whole story. There were other characters, but I think that's really what, kind of stood out from the piece. There's a lesson. There was a moral to this story. How's that? Is that good? Come on, Pam. Say that was good, Jim. I thought it was a great reflection of these ones in general. Because they do have this kindness about them that looks like. You know, it makes you kind of feel that way. Okay. So, yeah. Anyway, thank you, Dave, so much. I thought it was an excellent piece. And I appreciate it for sure. Tim, that brings me back to you. This is called There, There by Silent Tree. Whenever you're ready.
Salty tongues sing of a siren buried deep inside the shipwreck. To stray afield from gabled rocks has marooned of many men. Road of dark crescent waves and washed up on the shoreline. I gazed foreign stars bathed within moonlit solstice glaze. Just because you fear it doesn't mean it's there. As dawn draws first breath, I walked your woodland landscape, knotted branches dance, leaf puppets, naked without strings. Decaying boughs of the crust, ashes sailed from my sleep. A desert of broken limbs twisted the dirt neath my feet. Just because you see it doesn't mean it's there. A voodoo legion of acorn idols shepherd me as I crept. Hurried steps within a labyrinth tripped me as I seek. The deeper I crawl to where the amber candles wept. The beating of drums through a circle struck by my many hands. Just because you hear it doesn't mean it's there. Cauldrons full of grains cradle the depths of ancient strands to tame the timid creatures that grazed upon the land. Rattle caw of the crows perched upon antlers' crooked canes. The ink-beaded eyes searched out golden threaded treasures. Just because you taste it doesn't mean it's there. Squirrel canopies did march whilst the gnawing never ends. Rodents swarm like a hive to pluck the hair from my brain. Teardrops signal the harvest of sand falling from my slumber. To feed the maze of oak roots as sap, dewdrops bleed ambergris. Just because you feel it doesn't mean it's there. Woke inside a latest wicker effigy to cage my flesh, necropsies. With ropes made of grapevines, they anchor me to ash trays, alligator trunks, shadow faces, the looking glass of time. Placed afore the primordial oak tree, alter a lifeless wooden man. Just because you dream it doesn't mean it's there. As the vine wicks ignited, I burn a light of crimson flame. My body's skin a twisted waxwork until only bones remain. As silver smoke billowed skyward, it carried off my spirit. The chance echo spiral pulled me down into the frame. There, there. End poem.
Wonderful read, Pam. Really wonderful. Laurent, you ready for your first dibs here?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I'm giving this a second read. I'm trying to hem and haw, talk while reading at the same time. Not the easiest thing I've done. It seems as if every stanza is addressed by that solitary line. In the first stanza, we have the salty tongue sing of a siren, buried deep inside the shipwreck, the stray afield from gabled rocks, as marooned of many men. And as this individual stands, he gazes on foreign stars bathed in moonlight solstice glaze. I'm thinking he sees this in his imagination. And it's something to be worried about. It's something to be scared of. But just because you fear it doesn't mean it's there. You can imagine it, but it may not exist. And the same thing with the next stanza. As dawn draws first breath, I walk you with a landscape, knotted branches dance, leaf puppets naked without strings, decaying bowels of the crust, ashes sailed from my sleep, a desert of broken limbs twisted, the dirt beneath my feet. And now, because he sees all of this in his imagination, it doesn't mean that it actually exists. So it's almost like a little negation of every stanza. And maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it seems as if that is what he carries through. And as he does that, he gives us any number of wonderful images that speak of things like sacrifices and imagery that are really sad. My body's skin, a twisted waxwork until only bones remain. I like the way this is written. Very nicely done.
I have to absolutely agree with every bit of that. I think this is just a fabulous write. Each stanza really spoke on its own, separately. The individual repeat line, I think, was just, there was a wonderful touch to it. Somehow it just, you know, it gives you the object, of course, that it's just because, you know, it doesn't mean it's there. You know, you imagine it, you know, you dream it, you think it, you feel it, you whatever. But each one of these stanzas is convincing in another direction. You know, just, I don't know, it's kind of amazing. I was just loving every bit of it when Pam was reading it. There's just so many stanzas that I really just thought were fabulous. So thank you so much, Silent Tree. This is great. I know you said it needs a lot of editing. But I got to say, I think it's really good, really, really good. So, Pam, I'm going to toss it over to you.
All right. Well, this certainly did have wonderful imagery all the way through. I like how, to me, it spoke on the cycles of life and death and sacrifices made. I like how... The imagery in Cauldron Full of Grains, Cradle the Depths of Ancient Strands, Tame the Timid Creatures that Grazed upon the Land, Rattle Call the Crows, Perched upon Antlers, Crooked Cane, The Ink Beaded Eyes Search Out Golden Threaded Treasures. I feel like, and then the in-between lines, like you guys were talking about, were really cool, and with the just because you taste it doesn't mean it's there, just because you feel it doesn't mean it's there. It's almost like the idea of that world between, you know, the veil between the two worlds, and how oftentimes there becomes that tear in the veil, and and how our imagination plays tricks with us. But I feel like, you know, this is The end, I think, speaks on, you know, the end of somebody's life and how through their own death purpose was found. So excellent write and very well done.
Amen. This is just a wonderful piece. Let me learn a little bit. Just wonderful. Okay, so here is the next one I'm going to put up. And this is called Beckoned Before, Summer Sonnet by Jenny DeVue. So here we go. Second Bee Court, Summer Sonnet by Jenny DeVue. Extending an assisting olive branch, protecting against those who shall not pass, steadfastly serving small critters, warming seasons, shivering in the winter. My bark is worse than my bite. Guarding Mother Nature is worth the fight. Swinging sticks, singing summer songs, in the forest hidden in trees is where I belong. Witnessing wondrous winds, succumbing to the sun's brightness, hatching sparrows, butterflies, and blue jays reminds me of the magic from each new day. I find it my right, my duty, to honor the life of nature that is my mother. And Pam, can I give it a go?
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Jean. I like Jenny's use of a lot of near rhyme. I think it has a nice feel to it. This is a wonderful storytelling in sonnet form. And I like how she writes about a fictional character in a fictional situation that really, to me, reflects a reality of the importance of being a guardian to nature. I really like this all the way through, but especially witnessing wondrous winds, succumbing to the sun's brightness, hatching sparrows, butterflies, and blue jays reminds me of the magic from each new day. Great lines and very well done.
Right. Absolutely. And a lot?
I agree wholeheartedly with what Pam said about being a guardian for nature. We're all nature's children. And the human race, as it has grown up, has turned into a very nasty child. It's done a lot of horrible things to its mother. But as we grow older, we're beginning to wake up to the importance of guarding Mother Nature, of that being worth the fight, of appreciating everything we see around us. And I think that as we harness the power of the sun, the power of the wind, the power of nature itself, we will appreciate it even more than we have in the past, because we're entering a world where there aren't going to be as many things that rape the earth as we develop new technology, new power, et cetera. We'll need less and less, I think, of the world, and perhaps we can give it time to heal. And I find that all of that is embodied in the last two lines. I find it my right, my duty, to honor the life of nature that is mother. Very nice by Jenny.
And then you have to say, I thought this was a great poem. I really enjoyed the piece. I think your second and third stanzas were really wonderful. And I also felt that it was a good reflection of all the prompts. Because as I was reading this, I was imagining all those little beacorns, you know, and all the different poses and how they, you know, you could see it as they were protecting Mother Nature and making trying to make things better, keep things safe, you know, watch out for things. So I thought that was very well said. A nice job. Thanks for sharing. Absolutely. Okay, getting back to the door. Okay. opinion on. Get a drink of water. And a deep breath. And I'm going to give you this poem. It's called Follow the Rubble Into the River. Come Home by Ben Hunt.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. I owe you a dollar.
You owe me $2 now.
All right.
We're getting here.
Yeah. So Follow the Rubble Into the Ripple, Come Home by Ben Hart. Interloper, foe of unfamiliar faces, where do you go when the world starts to stare back at the anxious observer invisible, when horizons are illusions of depth over distance, and you may light another cigarette to ease the upset of your restless head. But after 3 minutes more, you'll be right back where you left, that unfamiliar road some would call dread, and some would see as good a place as any. The leaves rustle, the smoke hangs still like a cloth across the table, where old men debate and call each other names, but neither care to win. They're just singing in the wind, glad not to be alone on a summer's day. And all the interloper's thinking is, please don't look my way. Smoke on patrol. You think we drove him to it, that in the intermittent silence, the quiet weighed the same as the thick of it, and we weren't there to see how it ate at him. These sorts of questions belong with a wiser man than I. Perhaps to scream, let your thoughts avalanche down the mountain, leave it with God. As long as you leave it somewhere outside of yourself, that's the mistake he tried to correct when he put a bullet in his own head. Maybe, or perhaps the echoes returned louder than he let them out. I mean, look at us now. At least he isn't sitting around waiting to die anymore. You don't think this is it, do you? That we fight this war to some favorable end, and then it's done with us? That we get to live happy little lives out in the countryside? I think something has been asked of us, and that it's not about the peace we're fighting for, the reward, that's not for us, but for those who never fought. And you can think it's unfair, unjust, unkind, but it's what we signed up for when the Reaper knocks on our doors. And you're right in the sense that evil triumphs when good men do nothing. And it cost us a friend. We just needed someone to scream at. But that doesn't mean the fight is lost. On the contrary, you're Daniel. It gives us something to keep fighting for. Now let's get back. That way's going to freak if we're not back in time. Become wild. Little wicker men with acorn faces, invading wilder lands, static in restless places. Alive as though twisted into form by hands warmed with haste to bring a little unseen peace changing peripheries. Return to joy what once was done away with. The dancer beneath the bowing little bloom that was a wilder streetlight, in absence of man marooned and so overgrown in time, but still shining, even if there's only a dancer lonely to watch it. The traveler, son of golden autumn, who finds himself lost in lands forgotten, after cloud turned to mist, turned to snow, and with no footsteps behind him, he doesn't know where to go. Until a wise old bird told him to empty his pockets and packs, and then all he'd have to do was follow the rubble all the way back. The hunters, with the whole world behind them, home wherever they roam, only when they lose their prey or another predator finds them, they settle in for another hungry day. Perhaps the gatherers had more success which they might if they ever stopped feeding every hungry stomach the forest could drum up. The gardener who paints with seeds, rain, and patience, who makes sure the shade still gives way to growth, who rakes and leaps and seldom sleeps because of the cockerels and their cadence, always up to take in the daylight, who let his flock of flowers know from the first parting of stem and seed to their final hours of sunshine, he is there to help them through and see them bloom, he is there to give them life and see them die. So God must be a gardener, a little wicker man at work, putting footsteps into dirt and going farther, ever farther, into the quiet epicenter of this earth. Why else should it bring us relief, stop, and see something we would have missed, but tell us so much of what could have been, of what is left to us to imagine? That ripples exist to teach us that even little things begat immense differences, and that nothing in this world is ever built for waiting. Because that, what can be hard as stone, is sometimes only a push away from breaking. Why it is we cannot see the wind, because not all that is of interest is supposed to suffice as fully, because if you could see who is pulling, you would resist. That there is no unblemished form of beauty to remind us that God is flawed. Why else would all he made inspire awe? Why else would the rains come to reframe the dawn into a calling home of those that guard? Because God thought about his entrusted earth, that what was made in hands warmed with haste will always be more beautiful than the one to have made it. And so, if he couldn't be as beautiful today, perhaps he'd outdo himself tomorrow. He'd spend the day in the garden, hard at work, his knees in the ground, planting seeds of sorrow to be sustained, but pain and hurt, but blemished beauty springing from the dirt. After grief, I have to go. Call it childish, call it courage, I don't want to know. Out there, where clouds carousel and angels dwell, I have to go and reclaim myself. All you took of me with you, the places beyond body, where only soul shall enter, and it begins anew. God's good days. They all think I'm here to save them from every untimely agony, but I'm just clinging on to every reverie. How do I tell them it's not happening, that there is nothing left of me? And should the dome burn and sky would fall like broken glass, I think I'd still be singing to the bursting ground about the glories of the past. And should the rain cut me down and gravity reverses, I find I am, in fact, unworthy of anything beyond this earth. I think I'd still be hurtless because death, like the one to have loved me in this life, is a less cruel kind of denial than God could ever divine, and she loves us all, every pugilist against time, a thought into the fall, a kind defeat, a loving enemy.
Yeah, that was an absolutely wonderful read there, Lauren. You know, this really has brilliant imagery and metaphors, as always, with Ben. And I like how he told a story inspired by so many of the prompts. A beautiful vignette style. An excellent write that kind of speaks to me on a journey of understanding, you know, life and death, and you know, learning to understand yourself and your place in the world and where you need to be, and also understanding, the afterlife. And I don't know, just really thought-provoking, wonderful lines all the way through. I really like, why is it we cannot see the wind? Because not all that is of interest is supposed to suffice us fully. Because if you could see who was pulling, you would resist. I also really like the part about, and so God must be a gardener, a little wicker man at work, putting footsteps into dirt and going farther, even farther, into the quiet epicenters of this earth. Why else would it bring us relief to stop and see anything we would have missed that tell us so much of what we could have been? I feel like that becomes the thought of we're always looking for those signs in life, we're always looking to tell us which direction we're supposed to turn next. But absolutely brilliant lines and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Very much so. This is so much going on in this piece. I mean, kind of pick a space, a spot, a few lines. God, it's not easy. So I give you kudos for finding one. I can look at this. The traveler, son of golden autumn, who finds himself lost in lands forgotten. After clouds turn to mist, turn to snow, and with no footprints behind him, he doesn't know where to go. Until a wise old bird told him to empty his pockets and pack, and then all he'd have to do is follow the rubble all the way back. It's a wonderful little, it's a beautiful tale he's told throughout. And I like how each one of the stanzas references so many other prompts. You know, prompt one, or part one has prompt 32, two is 29. And then you get a bundle effect in three and four, which I thought was really neat how he had them interacting in that stanza, or that vignette, sorry. And then the very last one, you know, with a single again. But just a wonderful piece. I have to say, Ben never ceases to amaze me with his writing. And, he holds his thought, and he keeps everything like, relevant to each piece is relevant to another. And I don't know if I get it going on, in all these different vignettes and still been able to handle that, or hold that together. But, definitely incredible. And thank you so much, Ben, for sharing with us. Excellent piece, really. A wonderful addition to the sentiment. And Laurent, how about you?
It's a pretty special piece, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's complex, and it's a little, at times, a little bewildering as you're reading it, and you're trying to understand what you're reading as you're reading it. And I just found that it was a mix, and I wish I could spot exactly what each prompt was within the poem so I could address those particulars, but he used an awful lot of prompts. And the result is something of a lot of directions that you can go in. I found that he writes with an ease the ability to find metaphors and similes and ways of saying things that are really pretty stunning. He has a special pen. There, a lot of what I read, I just did not put in a context that allowed me to instantly say, well, I like it because da-da-da-da. I really appreciated the way he uses language. And I'm not going to attempt to go back and repeat anything that I read. But it is, like I said, he is a special writer, and his work is serious. And it requires study. And quite frankly, it's a little difficult to do that in a minute or two on the radio. And I know I'm gabbing on a lot, but I just want to make sure if he's listening that he understands that appreciation sometimes takes a little while, but when it comes, it smacks you right in the face, and you remember it because it's memorable. And this stuff is memorable. It's a great piece.
Mm-hmm. Great comment, Laura. Great comment. Okay. Well, I think that was just an excellent piece. Thank you, Ben. And Pam, I'm going to come to you. I have a piece by Scott Sharp. So whenever you're ready.
Forest Friends by S. Sharp. Little bluebird, I have scaled these heights, long summer days, cold winter nights. My oaken seed, shell-shocked with wavering limbs. Remember, stop a while, talk with your forest friends. I saw you early, saw you late. You got the worm. Please don't forget. Pause, climb between my elbowed twigs. My acorn heart beats. Nature's hugs I give. End poem.
Nice read, Sam. And Laurent, you and I start us off?
Are you picking on me?
No, Pam, right, can you go first?
you just make it. I think you're pinching me a little bit. Again, this falls into the category of charming, the personification. Wait a second. Yeah, the personification of the tree talking to the little bluebird, speaking about his open seed, shell-shocked with wavering limbs. You know, remember, stop while talking to your forest friends. You can't just go rushing about. You got the worm. And then my elbowed twigs and his acorn heart. Those are things that make me feel very fuzzy and warm. It's the whole thing. It's the whole poem does. Very nice. Very nice.
And I think that Scott did a great job with this. He did his poem based on the Bluebird video, which I kind of remember. I think he did a nice job reflecting that video. Because that was the one where he was showing how he created the creature and he was trying to get the bluebird to do what he wanted to do and for the video. It was really cute. But just a really nicely put together piece, as always, this time. Well expressed. I like the imagery and the I don't know. I just like a lot about it. I mean, it's a short piece, but there had a lot going on. So I think that it's just really nice. So thank you, Scott, for sharing with us. And Pam, that brings me to you.
Yeah, this is a wonderful brevity. I did like the imagery in it. It makes me think of the idea of the phrase, you know, take time to stop and smell the roses. And I really liked how, you know, it did speak on that idea and the idea of slowing down in life and embracing nature, embracing friends, you know, the importance of taking time for friends. And really it's a delightful write all the way through. But I did especially like where it said, I saw you early, saw you late, you got the worm. Please don't forget, you know. And then to me, when I read those lines, I thought about the phrase, you know, saying the early bird gets the worm. And here I feel like it's saying, you know what, sometimes you can sleep in or you can slow down and still get the worm. You know, you don't necessarily have to always push yourself to the point of exhaustion. But really a wonderful write and very well done.
Yeah, I think that this is a wonderful brevity by Scott. Great imagery, and it's really, I really enjoyed how he penned the piece together. Good stuff. So thank you, Scott, again. Appreciate it. Next week, I'm going to put up this by Big E2, and it's called The Graduation. I'm going to give it a read. to hatching from an egg high up on my shrub, pulling a healthy grub. And then, before the winter's killed, we build a sleeping bag attached beneath the strongest twig, hanging like a flag. Its silk was strong and durable, protecting you from chill. And then the warmth of springtime sun brought us all goodwill. For I then heard you staring, and summertime now brings new life and new adventure. How beautiful your wings. End poem. I like this one. Pam, you want to start us off on this one?
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful read, Jean. I really like this poem by Big E, too. But for some reason, you know, I'm just a fan of, you know, butterfly, you know, Chris, the transformation poems that use the image of the caterpillar turning into a butterfly. It's a simple thought, but at the same time, it can be very layered in that it represents our own transitions in life. And it also has kind of a nostalgic feel to me. Whenever I read a poem about caterpillars and butterflies, I think about childhood and, you know, caterpillars in jars with holes in the lids, and then you provide a stick and leaves for them, and then, you know, watch them make their cocoon and then all that, you know, and just it's such a wonderful time of discovery. But I like that he uses the title, The Graduation, and the imagery and extended metaphor to write about, you know, growth and, you know, learning to stretch your wings and transform as a person. So wonderful write and very well done.
Nice, Pam. And Lauren, how about you?
I was just admiring the way, the way Big E too rhymes. It's so completely natural. Every word is just the perfect word that you put there, and that's always nice. And I'm a big fan of a chorus. I used to be fascinated in the same way this little poem. Individual is fascinated by that chorus. One thing go in and the other thing go out, so to speak. Nice. Very, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
I echo what you guys said about this as well. Very well done.
Yeah, I love this poem. I really did. And I love the image that he wrote to. I thought it was just so sweet. There was also a video on that, and he had the guy who found out that he could buy monarch, he could raise monarch butterflies. From, I guess, an egg, and, you know, first the grubs and everything. So he bought a bunch of them, and he got them all, you know, going, and put branches in there, and he took this one branch that had the chrysalis on it and set it up as the background for the image. And he said there was a certain trait that happened when it was ready to open. And he waited until he saw it, and then put it together and had this all set up to see how he could get this image. And I thought it was just one bunch of patience that was. God bless him. You know, but I thought that the image was just adorable. And the look on the decoy's face is just one of like, wow. You know, I love that. But this poem is just incredible. And I have to say, I like both the standards, but the second one. You know, it's silk was strong and durable, protecting you from chill. And then the warmth of springtime sun brought us all goodwill. For I then heard you stirring in summertime now brings new life and new adventure. How beautiful you're winning. I thought that was just great. So thank you so, so much for sharing with us. Thank you, too. Hope to see you again soon. Thank you. Yeah, I'm really the way I am. This is going to bring me to, I have a piece here by Weaver Green. I'm going to put that up, and I have an audio for that. So Pam, whenever you're ready, Would you play that for us?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, I don't have the studio open. Sorry.
I didn't
have the studio open because you had called into the host number, so I apologize.
Oh.
Give me a moment.
Sorry. No, I got it. We can do it. We're good.
Okay.
There you go.
As a child, these sweet creations would have filled my daydreams with fun and adventure galore. Now, I find I want to have those adventures still, upon reaching my 60 years and 10, even more. I'll take you with me, but please be quiet, as here it's dusk, and the mayor of Oaksville's misgivings are growing. The Oaksvilleites have noticed that where flower lights had twinkled brightly, now only a few were dimly glowing. The mayor spoke to the flower fairies, who said it was a mystery to them. Their agreement with Oaksville still stood. The Oaksvilleites looked after the flowers during winter's thrall. In return, fairy lights drove back the night. Or they should. One night, the mystery was solved. Hearing snuffling from the forest floor, the fairy queen investigated and found a family of moles had disturbed the roots of all the flowers that gave light as they busily tunneled through the ground.
Yeah. Jane, do you want to start us off?
Did you say my name?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I really like this one. As always, Kate has made a wonderful SoundCloud. She has a great voice for reading any kind of poetry, but I think especially story poetry. And I like how she opens up with, as a child, these sweet creations would have filled my daydreams with fun and adventures galore. Because, you know, these little beacorn people really are something that would just look like they'd be so much to create stories with. And I like then how she creates a story with, you know, the mayor of Oaksville and the fairies and the agreement between them. And, of course, I think bringing in a fairy queen is always a delightful touch to storytelling. But just a wonderful write on a mystery solved with the use of cooperation that I think works well for young and old alike. So very well done.
Okay, Laurent, how about you? Am I going to get another dollar?
Sorry, I was on mute again. I apologize. Can you do me a favor and just skip me this on this one, please? I was distracted for a moment.
I think this is a wonderful tale told by Kate, as always. I loved her Oaksvilleites. I thought that was cute. And I thought it was clever and the most excellent story. I liked the detail that she went into, you know, expressing what was going on. Absolutely. So, anyway, thank you for sharing with us tonight. And great audio, great visuals. I love the imagery in there. Oh, yeah. Hi. Now, I'm going to go find the next one. Next, please. So this is good. Five. Go away. And I'm an audio for this one too. Let me hit one.
The Little Bully, written and read by Gerald Green. The son of a giant white oak tree pretended to be large and mighty. He held up a staff and stifled a laugh to hide his behavior most naughty. He stopped Mr. Blue with a caution as if he was in a position to order each bird with only a word within his self-made jurisdiction. You'd think he was king of the forest, presiding the mealworm inquest. He said with a scowl, "You decadent fowl, I'm placing you under arrest." The bluebird was bold and unshaken, concluding the beecorn mistaken. He jeered with a sneer that others could hear, concluding the ord godforsaken. He swallowed the worm with a pleasure, and burped in delight for good measure. Ignoring the words addressed to all birds, he scoffed with a swag of a feather. The beecorn was riled with anger, and threatened to speak to the ranger. "All bluebirds," said he, "must live peacefully to lessen insidious danger." The oak trees remember that day, and signal for peace with a sway. But never a scorn is needed to warn, is what to all beecorns they say. End poem.
Great song. Great song. Alarai, you ready to take yourself on this one?
Yes, ma'am. A limerick is a great way of telling a story. And he does this one beautifully. His rhyming is a pleasure. It's funny. It's witty. Great lines. You'd think he was king of the forest, reciting the mealworm impress. He said with a scowl, "You decadent fowl, I'm placing you on your arrest." It's sheer pleasure to read this stuff.
That nice comment, Laura. And Pam, how about you?
Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed this all the way through. I have to agree with Lawrence, you know, the limerick chain in for storytelling, especially with such a smile-inducing artwork, just works so well. I mean, it just connected. It had a wonderful vibe to it. And I loved hearing Lawrence chuckle at the part where it said, he said with a scowl, "You decadent fowl, I'm placing you under arrest." Because I think if any part of a poem was worth hearing a Lawrence chuckle, it would have been that. It is that part. So very cool there. But all the way through, of course, great rhyme and flow, just delightful and entertaining. And I really liked the storytelling and how it spoke on the importance of living in peace and harmony. So there was humor, and yet there was also an underlying message. So very well done.
Absolutely. I have to agree. I have to agree with both of you. I thought this was just an excellent piece. And I was happy to have it this afternoon. When I looked, I said, yes, yes, yes. So I liked a lot of it. I liked almost every stanza. You know, each one of those limericks was a mint. But this one here, the bluebird was bold and unshaken, concluding the beak were mistaken. He jeered with a sneer that others could hear, concluding the word had got forsaken. He swallowed the worm with a pleasure and burped in delight with his measure, ignoring the words addressed to all birds. He scoffed with a swag and said, I just think you did a great job with this. And it was clever. It was well done. It was a great audio. I mean, it's just a very well-rounded presentation for all of us. I think it's just lovely. Lovely. Yes. That will bring me to, I have the magic piece here. I do. I have one up here, and I skipped it. So shame on me. Now, Laurent, get to sit up. Pinch. This is a good one, and I say I want to say that it's by Pam, but she's sitting there, and you've got a comment. Sorry, I'm just being an ass. Okay, Pam, whenever you're ready, this is Rhubarb and Dilly Dally by Pam Wright.
Rhubarb, Stardust, and Dilly Dally the Mouse were the bestest of friends and had been since Rhubarb toddled around Mama Stardust's kitchen. And Dilly Dally had just started to open bleary newborn eye to a great big world. Rhubarb was a daydreamer, always wandering off in search of buried treasures and mystical objects from elfin realms. Dilly-dally on the other paw kept his mind and little furry body focused on hunting down monsters, dragons, and other ne'er-do-wellers. Everyone who knew them said they were quite the pair of mischief makers. Grandma Dally would often say, no matter where you hid trouble, those two boys were sure to find it. She said this with the knowing smile of a mouse that had raised more than her fair share of sons and grandsons. Summer was a favorite time of the year for both of the boys, filled with the sights and sounds that pulled them into hours of escapades and exploration. One day, while both of them were sitting upon the branch of the old oak tree and watching the busyness of the forest, Rhubarb sighed, "I'm bored," and Dilly Dally sighed back, "Me too." Rhubarb looked at his friend. "I have been practicing my entire 7 years of life on digging up imaginary treasure, and I just know if my parents would let me go beyond the forest and to the shores of the sea that pirates once sailed, I could find some real treasure." "And I," said Dilly Dally, "all these many years, I have been practicing fighting imaginary monsters with wooden sticks. I just know that if my father were to give me a real sword and permission to travel far, far beyond our home, I could fight evil and vicious creatures and save entire villages." "Then we would be heroes," said Rhubarb. Dilly Dally sighed again. "I would very much like to be a hero." "And," said Rhubarb, "we would be rich as kings." "I would very much like to be rich as kings," said Dilly Dally. Rhubarb stood up with a determined look on his face. "We are going to run away. We are going to become explorers and heroes." Dilly Dally squeaked with approval for such a fantabulous idea. "Yes," he shouted, "and no one will, or nothing will stop us." And just then, they heard the ringing of the dinner bell and both sniffed the fragrant air. For the time being, acts of heroism and treasure hunting would have to wait, at least until after a heaping helping of Mama Stardust, dandelion soup, and raspberry pie. End story.
What a great story, Jane. What a great story. I think, you know, your detail in your storytelling is always so wonderful. You know, I liked how Rhubarb Stardust and Dilly Dally the Mouse were their bestest of friends and had been. You know, I mean, that right there, that opens it up with this, you know, these two buddies and what they're about. Rhubarb was a daydreamer, always wandering off in search of buried treasures and mystical objects from elfin realms. Dilly Dally, on the other paw, kept his mind on little furry body focused and little body focused on hunting down monsters, dragons, and others near Dugo, who was. But I love the detail in this piece, as always. I mean, you are a wonderful storyteller. You're a fabulous poet, but your stories, boy, I'll tell you, you do such a fine job with them. And I love this, with no exception. And are we going to get a part two out of this one?
I'm not making any promises. I'm not kissing any babies or making handshakes or promises. So I'll try, but and thank you so much, and thank you for the inspiration.
Oh, that is wonderful. You know, I'm glad you got something from them. I thought they were just so cute and so, I don't know, endearing. And Laurent, you want to comment on things?
Yeah, I love the characters that you created, Pam. They're just ideal for this kind of poem. Where is it? Oh, Grandma Dally. Wait, let me start again. Everyone who knew them said they were quite a pair of mischief makers. Grandma Dally would often say, no matter where you hid trouble, those two boys were sure to find it. I like that little saying. The vernacular in this poem is really quite charming. you handle dialogue quite well. And I couldn't help but think of kids who make big plans to run away from home. And then they get as far as the end of the block, and they either turn around and come home, or they set up camp, like, within sight of the house. Kids don't want to be too far away, but, boy, we're independent. And I love that kind of thing. You created a couple of characters that are really kind of very believable. And, you know, given the context, I thought that was charming. And I absolutely fell in love with the dandelion soup and raspberry pie. Where's my place?
Thank you, Barry. Maybe Pam will get you some dandelion soup. She's magical, though. Neither one of you are tuned in. I keep joking, and I get dead silence from the other. It's a tough crowd here, guys, everybody. It's really a tough crowd. Whatever.
Oh, dear.
Come on, it's late. We're right in there. Come on. I want you to know that I've fallen asleep two times now, and I've self-resuscitated both times. I'm watching out for that third.
Yeah, third time's a charm, I think. Okay, Lauren, I'm going to have you read the next piece. So, Wakey Wakey.
Yeah.
This is called The Beacorn by Spring Sky 39.
Kevin the Beacorn. A tufted titmouse, hungry again, enjoys the time that he spends eating black sunflower seeds when food for most a scarcity. With snow covering all the land, Kevin is there as acorn man, providing when winter too cold, with he a beacon good as gold. With his own precious supply, Kevin helps to keep many alive. With Titmouse Carl, he didn't know getting a meal when he showed. Slowly the day starts to warm for those knowing a tiny beacorn. Little Kevin with its bitter case that once so small can be great. And with a hat with a tiny feather, Kevin the beacorn is a trendsetter, being a deciduous one to his core, but a masked example of the great Lord. End quote.
Nice read, Lord. And Pam, do you want to start us off on this?
Yeah, absolutely. Great read, Lauren. This is wonderful. You know, there's something about these prompts, I think, that inspire people to write about kindness. And I like that he's created this main character who makes it their job to be kind to everybody. And how the importance of those small acts of kindness, and you know, I really like this all the way through. But especially with his own precious supply, Kevin helps to keep many alive. The Titmouse Carl, he didn't know getting a meal when he showed. Slowly the day starts to warm for those knowing a tiny beacorn. With little Kevin, a particular case that one so small can be so great. And I really like that line, that one so small can be so great. So wonderful lines and very well done.
Excellent. Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful brevity, and I really enjoyed the piece very much. I thought it was amazing work, this great rhyming meter. And I think the tale was really, really cute that he told. You know, slowly the day starts to warm for those knowing a tiny beacorn. With little Kevin, a particular case that one so small can be great. I like that. And as you said, Pam, it does seem that he sparked off lights about kindness. And, you know, that's always good, I think. But, yeah, it's just a sweet sweet poem, nice rhyme, nice meter, and just a great, great story, you know, in it. And Laurent, what do you have to say, man?
I have to say that I agree with you and Pam. Kevin Liddy Korn is a charming little poem. I keep saying charming, but that's the way I find them. I find those little figures, very, very lovable. This particular piece, again, like a couple of them were read tonight, yeah, can be used as a good little teaching poem. Big help for making it obvious that one little person can make a great difference. And that's something you can teach children. Something actually a lot of adults should learn as well. It's very nice, very nicely done.
Very nice. Okay. Now, next one. Tim, I think I'm going to ask you to read this one for Lulu. Okay. Well, I tripped over the last few things I wanted to read. Tell me if that's on my eyepiece or something. Did you say the right?
Nothing.
Sorry. I thought I heard you say something. Blushing Rosette, Florence, by Lulu Wildbaum. So, Pam, whenever you're ready.
All right. Tracker Forest, splendid array of pink delights. Dancing spinal wooden limbs, spirits caress my acorn helmet. Eternity pathways happily treading, protecting, blushing, fuchsia rose blossoms, skipping through aged trees, jumping over wet river pebbles, ancient pathways, nut helmet gifted, roaming through green grass, winter's raindrop fire leaves of last autumn's foliage, glistening golden bees, bright, multicolored, buzzing, flapping wings, dahlion bee, pollinating scents, fragrancy of wild apple blossoms where I climb across forest tiers. Euphoria, morning sun rays beam across my blissful face. Durantia whispers her linguistic notes, clouds, bird songs, rustling leaves, infused since birth, we watchers, guardians of knowledge, we be corns, rekindle nature, white mothers, sacred ways, along with tree fairies, enchanting powers, yearning, longing, hankering to roam in spring's jewel pink, unraveling blooms draping, my brownish dried horns mischief filled, my mind chasing red-black little bugs till the dusk till dawn, waving farewell to fiery ginger, copper, scarlet sunset, awaiting golden saffron, morning rays yawning another day of drinking morning dew, memorized mystical compositions carry me through my enchanted journey of wild opening, blushing, roseate, floweret, and poem.
Excellent read, Tim. Laurent, would you like to comment on this?
Here? Of course I want to comment on this. Are you kidding me? Pam did a great job reading that.
Mm-hmm.
But in Louie's voice, it might have almost been something different. She has this habit. Well, never mind. What I like most about this is what I like about most of her poetry, right, is she uses nature, the blushing fuchsia, the rose blossoms, giving to age trees, jumping over wet river pebbles, ancient pathways. So nicely describes the scenery, the nut helmet gifted rolling through green grass, the listening golden bees, bright multicolored buzzing, euphoria, morning sun rays beam. It just paints a beautiful picture. When you get to that end, again, it's really something to lead Luya when she feels that she's writing deeply, waving farewell to fiery ginger, copper, scarlet sunset, awaiting golden saffron morning rays, yawning, another day of drinking more, memorized mystical compositions, carrying me through my enchanted journey, while opening blushes, roseate blossoms. The album's a great time. This is a great piece. I'm losing my voice, that baby. That Ben Hart poem killed me.
Is that what happened? That was a long time ago. Absolutely, though. Pam, do you want to go next?
Yeah, I love this. I love the imagery and how she captures the personality of the little beacorn who loves nature and believes in magic and adventure. Wonderful use of imagery all the way through. Great attention to detail. I really like euphoria, morning sun rays beams across my blissful face, Durantia whispers her linguistic notes. And I like how it speaks on that, that playful sprite with a deep love for nature and the music within nature. Wonderful imagery and metaphors all the way through. I really like the use of color in waving farewell to fiery ginger, copper, scarlet sunset, awaiting golden saffron morning rays, yawning another day of drinking morning dew. Wonderful line and beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. I think that this was another fabulous poem by Lulu. Definitely different than most of the ones we see because it's great for something that we put up for Wednesday and what have you. But it's beautiful. I like the detail in the work itself. You know, it's great imagery throughout. And I like the tale that she told, and, you know, I thought it was a good reflection on the prompt. So beautiful work with you, and thank you so much for sharing with us. I really appreciate it. Thank you. And that's it for the big one. So, I know I had that. You run a little, well, I asked you to run an 8-entry contest camp in case we needed one. So, let's see. Go ahead and I'll read the next one. This is a piece by Rhonda Nostrick. And this is based, on a prompt camp. Oh, never mind. This is called The Land of Magic by Rhonda Yostrich. Yes, question number one. And the other read, let me see them as this one. The Land of Magic. I have this imaginary world where fairies are my best friends, a bevy of fashionable fairies bewitched by their shining wings. And the chosen flower rests and sleeps as this grows, the fairy grows. Exceptional charming princess wakes up looking effortlessly chic. With giggles, you brighten up any day. Take me out into the dull, gloomy world to the magic land of alluring fairies where everyone is young and pretty. Come, graceful fairies, spread your wings. I'll ride with you upon cheerful wind. Under the twinkling lights of the stars, we will dance by its ethereal moon glow and poem. Pam, do you want to start us off on this one?
Yeah, I thought this was absolutely delightful. I love the flow of imagery all the way through, how she speaks on the importance of imagination and spreading joy and happiness. I really particularly liked the second and third stanzas. And the use of the phrase effortlessly chic. I mean, in the chosen flowers rest and sleep as they grow the flowers, the fairies grow too. You know, wonderful line. and very well done.
Nice. And Laurent, how did you give us a comment on this one? And Laurent, would you like to comment on this? Maybe off mute. Hello. Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess maybe I'll comment on that. And Laurent, wake up. Oh, I thought this was an adorable writing with all these wonderful images running through. That image that's at the top of the piece is so precious. I have this imaginary world where fairies are my best friends. That'd be a fashionable fairy, bewitched by their shining wings. And the chosen flower nest are at rest and sleep. As this grows, the fairy grows too. This exceptional, charming princess wakes up looking effortlessly. I think that it's just really just a fabulous piece and nicely written. And great job. Great job, Wanda. Wanda, I always mess it up. Excellent work. Laurent? No. That hinders me on my mind. Laurent. Okay. Pam, I'm going to get you to read this next one. And this is called Tremendous Treat by Diane D.
Don't we have a SoundCloud for that? Or is that a different? Oh, that's a different one. Okay, never mind. Sorry. All right.
Yeah.
Naked Trees by Diane D. The morning crisp and golden like an apple, awakening from snags was air like cider within the cobbler crust of carob and camel. October flashes winter this year's last smile towards where shadows and darkness meet pale amber. Sunlight falls across the thickets. A hurrying rustle of brittle leaves blow along. Came a gable of a flock of migrating geese, where noons go quickly and midnight lingers, mist as thick as thieves swathe tawny leaves. The trees are covered in pallid hues of decay. The earth lets itself be inhaled in one breath. The trees were tall charcoal sticks, shivering cold stars rush through wispy, ragged clouds on a bare branch. The cawing crow is perched, cackling off where an October bonfire burns. Sweet corn kernels scattered by road tractors, blackening, shriveled, hiding within the husks. One more autumn moon would sure give rise, for nature had saved up for her grand finale. End poem.
Wonderful read, Pam. Wonderful read. This is a wonderful piece by Diane. Just full of imagery and description. I thought she did a fabulous job. The morning, crisping golden like an awakening from the snag, hair like cider, with the cobbler crust of carob and caramel. October flashes into the years of smile. That's just one stanza there. Just shares the wonderful imagery and descriptions she has going on. It's just fabulous, fabulous, and very, very well written. And Danielle, and thank you so much for sharing with us tonight. You did a fun job. I really enjoyed it. And Pam, do you want to comment?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Diane did a wonderful job with this. Great use of color and imagery, and I really like how she's captured the season of autumn and all the beauty that it has to offer up, and the idea of how it's on the edge of winter and the transition from one season into the next. But I love her ending lines with, "One more autumn moon would surely give rise, for nature has saved up for her grand finale." But I also like where she says, "On a brier branch the con crow is perched, cackling off where an October bonfire burns." Delightful lines and very well done.
Nice comment, yeah. Nice. I'll say one more time the lot. Are you with us? We have 8 minutes. I'm going to put up this ask. And there's going to be a book. This is called Nest Litter by Laurent Devon. I am nutsayer, burrower, and hider of many things, born with ears able to hear the secret whispers of one. Acorn folk soft, arrogant in itself, thinking to steal back their young, tender nut that finds so delicious. More will fall, more will I bury. Seek not what I hide, and do not risk my teeth, for I would shred you in little bits. They fall to the forest floor, vanishing anonymously into the leaf filter and stay frightened. They ban your spears, the white corn people. My patience ebbs. Twigs are brittle and acorn heads are ripe for the cracking. You wear me, the dead monk of Dury Lane. These environs are my consistent. There we go. The black and white stripe of my side rope. Be gone before I call down the fury of thunderbolt on you. Acorn wastes I name you, desiccated shells of possibilities, destined to dry into brown dust. My nest was your fate. And so. Laurent, would you like to comment on that piece? And Pam, how about you?
Oh, I thought this was wonderful. Great read there, Jean. Lawrence definitely has a gift for storytelling, and I enjoyed his humor and how he uses the first-person narrative from the point of view from the chipmunk. More will fall, more will I bury. Seek not what I hide, and do not risk my teeth. For I would shred you in little bits that fall to the forest floor, vanishing anonymously into the leaf litter and detritus. Wonderful lines bringing the true ferociousness of this chipmunk to life that, trying to just simply to protect their hoard. And I also like the phrase of acorn waves. I name you desiccated shells of possibilities destined to dry into brown dust. It has a wonderful, both delightful humor and an epic adventure feel at the same time. So very well done.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to agree. I thought this was a great imaginative piece. And I thought that it really, really reflected this prompt very well. Between the chipmunk and the little acorns going after the chipmunk, I thought that it was just, it was so appropriate, you know. I really had a lot happen. I am not their furrower and hider of many things. I got a kick out of that. You know, how many times have we seen something that's shiny? Let me go grab that. That's what they do, and they hide them. And I like to lay down your spears with acorn people. My patience ebbs. Twigs are brittle, and acorn heads are ripe for the crack. You know, just a little mad monk had some smoke to him, you know. But I did. I really loved it. And I appreciate Laurent writing for the contest. And I thank you, Pam, because it was not on the news. And that was, I'm telling my fault. So apologies. I'm sorry, Laurent. It wasn't intentional. But yeah, so this was a fabulous piece, and it was a nice surprise that he was kind enough to write for us and come tonight. And then I kept him alone for long and didn't put his piece up. So I feel guilty. Anyway, it really was great. And now we have 3 minutes left. And today is Tuesday. There's no after midnight show, right? We don't have like an early show tomorrow. So tomorrow night we have The Art of Seduction with myself and anyone else who cares to join me. We may not have an after midnight show tomorrow night. I'm not sure if anybody is not feeling well. This is a fact. And then Thursday we have Richard and Laurent. Laurent will be co-hosting with Richard. And I believe that Neutron will also be there. And then we have Break On Through with you, Pam. What's on the agenda for Break On Through?
Well, Break On Through, we got some carryovers, and then we also will have some rights inspired by the art of Carol Nelson. And I still have that contest running if anybody would like to check it out and be inspired.
And then Friday, just, you know, fill my eyes with poetry and company with poetry. And, yeah, we're going to do open poetry, followed by Once Upon a Time with Pam and Dexter. Topic this time around is, Pam?
It is prostitutes, or wait, not prostitutes, brothels and opium dens. So, it's been an interesting night.
Yeah, it's been interesting evening, that one.
Absolutely.
We've been having a great turnout for the show, so I'm not going to knock it, you know. But I hope everyone will give that a whirl. And then Saturday, I believe, is Ray Eyes and Dan DeCino, followed by, I think we have an awesome. Yeah, it's an off week, right, Pam? Yeah. So, yes, and then Rhythm and Rhyme with Rex is on Sunday. And what's this group on Sunday, Pam? Do you know that one?
The Traveling Wilburys.
That's right. You did say that. Sounds like a good show to me. Anyway, thank
Absolutely.
You very much.
That would be a great show.
Thanks for hanging with me tonight, Pam. I really appreciate it. Laurent, we appreciate you. Even though you probably don't feel really appreciated right now. I do, I do. And, yeah, I want to thank everyone for listening and tuning in. All that good stuff. So, Pam, have a great night, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.